What's up, martial artists? Welcome to Black Belt, a martial arts lifestyle podcast. I'm your host, Harinder Singh, and we're going to bridge the gap between sport, tradition, and reality. Join me as I sit down with world-class practitioners to discuss their lifestyles, to teach you about their mindset, training, and fighting methods so that we can grow from their wisdom. My guest this episode is Misha Tate, who is a pioneer and trailblazer of women's mixed martial arts. She is the former Strikeforce and UFC bantamweight champion and was vice president of ONE Championship. She is currently fighting for the UFC. Misha Tate has built a career on mental fortitude and going beyond her limitations. My key takeaway is that martial arts teaches us to stay calm and composed in high-pressure situations and gives us the ability to not freak out and be over-emotional. We talk about fight preparation, strategy, and the importance of mental and physical conditioning. We also discuss the growth of mixed martial arts and how important it is for athletes to be able to train the individual parts, boxing, Thai boxing, wrestling, and jiu-jitsu, and then be able to integrate them into one fluid whole. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Black Belt. I'm your host, Harinder Singh. Today with me, I have a very, very special guest, Misha Tate, a pioneer of women's mixed martial arts, former UFC bantamweight champion, and now VP of ONE Fighting. It's a real pleasure and honor to have you on board.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's been quite a journey and everything. I know we were just talking about, you thought I was still over in Singapore, but now I'm back here in the US. No, so I'm back in Vegas, but still working with ONE Championship and really enjoying, you know, the whole process. COVID's definitely thrown a wrench in the mix, but I think that's a no-brainer. Everybody's kind of aware of that at this point. So I'm just enjoying being back home. I think when you live somewhere else, especially if you go overseas, if you've never done that, or if you have done it, you know what you're missing. Like when you come home, there's just no place like home.
For sure. For sure. So, you know, while we're on the experience of living overseas in Singapore, what was that experience like? You know, because Singapore is the melting pot of Asia. You have people from India, you have people from Malaysia, from Hong Kong, from, you know, it's like that central melting pot out of a place. What was the experience like?
Well, I mean, it was still culture shock, that's for sure, because you get over there and it's just totally different. But I tell you what, I have traveled around a lot of countries in Asia, and I feel like Singapore is the closest to America. It's very, like you said, it's a melting pot, right? So we had that in similar to the US, where it's just very multicultural. There's about 5.7 million people living in Singapore. So for how tiny it is, there's a lot of people. It's a very busy place. I got to explore some new food. Have you ever had laksa?
I've tried it before. Yes, I have.
Okay.
Singapore.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, so good. I never had laksa before. So I like the coconut based one. I guess there's two different kinds. I always stuck to the coconut, the creamy one, but always fun to try new foods. People are cool, and it was a great experience. It's kind of a bummer we had to cut it a little bit short, but that was because of COVID. You know, we were supposed to be there for 2 years. It ended up being more like a year and a half. But once everything locked down and, you know, we had the challenge of throwing events and everything like that, I was kind of like, you know what? I want to come home. So we did that, and here we are, very blessed.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You know, and that leads me to one of the most important things I like to talk about with my guests is about the mental fortitude, you know, and that ability to adapt. And, you know, looking over your career and watching you come up and seeing all the different evolutions you've done and the limitations you've kind of conquered. Tell me about mindset and building that mental fortitude.
Mindset and building that, huh? Well, I mean, I think there's a foundation to it. I've got to give a lot of thanks and credit to my mom. I mean, I can't take all the credit over here. Everyone's like, oh, you're so mentally tough. I'm like, I got it from my mama, you know? She is just an incredible woman. So she definitely led by example. But I think, a lot of times we have internal dialogue with ourselves all the time, right? And it's a matter sometimes of winning the smallest battles in your head before you win the big battles on a big stage. So, you know, it's that conversation like, oh, but I'm so tired. Like, should I go to the gym? Oh, you know, you start coming up with reasons to justify why you're not going to go today, you know? And then it's like, you've got to learn to like discipline your mind in those small battles to like conquer the big battles. And I think that's really important. So that internal dialogue, have a plan for the day, the next day, before you go to sleep at night. I'm waking up and at this time I'm going to the gym, period, end of conversation. You don't have a conversation with yourself beyond that. That's it. Because if you start making up excuses or reasons, or you start letting yourself, you know, tell yourself like, oh, you know, chances are going down, like that you're going to make it to the gym. So I always say that, have a plan the night before you go to bed, stick to it. No more internal dialogue, except that you're going to go. And when you do have those moments, you know, of internal dialogue, because we're human, right? We all make mistakes. Sometimes it's going to happen. Stay disciplined. For every reason you come up with otherwise, just nope, I'm not listening to that today. I'm listening to only the side that's going to encourage me to go and accomplish whatever it is. You know, I'm speaking about the gym because obviously that's what I do. But I mean, this could be studying. This could be, I don't know, like whatever your passion is, whatever that drive is that you've got to get accomplished, you know, those little tiny battles are where I think it matters most.
I love that. I love that philosophy. You know, as General Sun Tzu says, you know yourself and know your enemy and you're sure to succeed. And that battle with that first enemy inside, right? Because yes. I think most of the time we're fighting two people, us and then the person across the
exactly. Ring. Exactly. 100%. So the battles, you know, that you win on a daily basis, those little tiny ones, the decisions, basically every decision you make, you know, can really boil down to like a win or a loss, you know, and they really add up at the end of the day.
So would you say it's safe to say that it's the conscious decisions over time that stack up to make success? Because, you know, most of the time people will say, hey, you know, you're prepping for a fight or you're prepping for a big event or somebody who's prepping for a job interview or whatever. That's the event. But there's 1,000 tiny decisions that are chosen every time, that those are the little victories. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yes. Millions of those. I mean, it takes a lot of consecutive right decisions for anybody successful, you know, to have gotten there. They have won millions of tiny internal battles to get to that point. So I think that's really where it all begins. And if you can't stay mentally disciplined and win those small battles, then I just think, you know, it's, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Wonderful. And so do you think then the opposite of that, you know, when we allow the, you know, I call it the saboteur, that voice in my head that comes in is like, you know, oh, take the day off. You work so hard. You deserve it. And, you know, it's every time we listen to it, do you think we empower it so that when it comes into the fight, now it gets active there too. But when you shut it down in your training and make those decisions, you allow it to help shut down in the fight also?
You know what? I think everything comes down to a balance. And here's the other side of it. It's not that you should never take a day off or that you should, I mean, you've got to have your plan, right? But you've also got to listen to yourself a little bit, right? Because there are people who overtrain. I would say 9 times out of 10, when you see somebody gas out in a fight or in a main event, it's because they trained too hard and too much and they didn't pump the brakes a little bit. You get stronger when you're resting too. So there's got to be a balance. And that means like, you've really got to become an expert at finding the balance, right? So stay disciplined on the days that you need to stay disciplined. But if you are to a breaking point or you feel like you really have to dial it back, then make the decision. This should not be a conversation like, oh, you know, I was planning to go to the gym, but I'm just a little tired. I just don't, you know, if you're being whiny about it, like go. But if you're like, you've been going hard for 2-3 weeks, you know, and you're just like, oh my, I am feeling really bad. Like I've been having 4 days of horrible training. Maybe you need to take a step back. And when you do that, make the decision. It's not an internal dialogue. It's not, maybe I should know. If you're taking a day off and enjoy the day off, enjoy it. Do not sit there and feel guilty about it, whatever, because then you're taken away from the purpose of recovery, right? Recovery is just as important as being active with it. So again, it's like, it's all about balance. So those days off are very important too. And that can be, again, I always refer it to like a gym scenario because that's where I come from. But I just want to let people know that that could be any scenario. You know, that could be that I have been studying my my hiney off for weeks on end. My brain feels like it's going to explode. I need to take half day today, or I need to get out and do something else, as opposed to feeling like I need to continue on that grind. Cause you know, sometimes you work too hard. You overwork yourself, right? So people need balance in order to be happy. You can't do something you love 24/7, literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can't, it's too much. You know, so you will overload yourself, even if it's something that you absolutely love and enjoy. There are pauses that are meant to be taken, right? So that we can enjoy those moments, right? So it's all about balance, really.
I love that. I think that's such functional advice, because oftentimes we lack that self-awareness and we lose track of who's making the decision. You know, like, oh, I gotta go train, I gotta push it, because you're really scared and you're worried about what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And then, do you think it's the fear that makes people overtrain, or what causes people to overtrain?
I think people just tend to feel like they're not doing enough, and they don't have self-awareness. Like you said, this is something, you know, people make mistakes early in their careers, you know, to fighting or whatnot, because they don't have the self-awareness, right? They don't really understand what it takes to get to the top level, and they're afraid to not do enough. That's really scary feeling, to go into a fight or a competition and be like, ooh, I don't know if I did enough. That is the scary feeling, like losing the fight, getting hit, you know, getting put in a submission, you know, failing a test. Like, those are scary too, but like, to not have the confidence going into it that you did enough, I would argue is more scary. So I think people fear that. They want to go in knowing they did everything possible. But everything possible does also mean the recovery time. It does mean that. I mean, a body needs that time. When you're in the gym and you're lifting weights and you're going heavy and you feel your muscles burning and you go home and you sleep and the next day you wake up and you're really sore, that's because you were damaging yourself to get stronger. But you're not getting stronger while you're lifting the weights. You're not. You're actually getting weaker. You're getting stronger when you go home that night and you stay disciplined and you get a good night's sleep. You put your phone away 30 minutes before you need to go to bed so that you can actually sleep a restful night, right? Those are the things. You take your supplements. So that's when you're getting stronger, right? So you need it in balance to actually gain. So if I just go every day repeatedly and I lift as heavy as I can, as hard as I can, I'm not going to gain as much as if I give, you know, a day between and I do something else. Maybe I go for a run, or maybe, you know what, maybe I take a day off because my body's really beat up and I need to recover. Those are the things that you've got to figure out, how your body can maximize the time that you spend in the gym. And that means, in equal part, you need to maximize the time that you're resting.
Wonderful. I love that. So you think a big part of it, you know, comes down to doubt, because, you know, my teacher would say doubt is the greatest enemy that we can give to our opponent. And how do you deal with doubt? Did you do visualization? Do you have like special tricks you would use, like before you prepared for the fight? How would you get rid of that doubt, you know, or self-talk? What are some of the techniques that you use so that, you know, we can share it with a lot of our listeners?
Again, the internal dialogue, right? Everybody is going to have doubt. If somebody doesn't have any doubt, at never a moment of doubt, if they tell you that, they're lying. Like, there's nobody on this planet. I don't care if you're the baddest man or the woman, you know, everybody has moments where they doubt, you know, who they are or their ability to do something, to accomplish it, especially when there's a lot of pressure on the line. So again, I mean, I had doubt every single fight. You know, I would have like a moment where I'd be like, ooh, you know, and it's when you hear that thought creep into your head, you know, and you have that internal dialogue, it's a matter of pushing it out, you know, pushing it out and reassuring yourself time and time again, as many times as you need to be like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm not going to doubt myself. I'm not going to feed into that, right? That's going to weasel its way in a little bit, and you're going to shove it out. And eventually that becomes less and less and less. It's a quieter voice because you're not feeding it. You're not giving it any power to have force in your life, you know? So again, it's those little tiny decisions, those little mental battles that come out. But, you know, doubt is a scary thing, but it can also be, you know, maybe doubt isn't something that you want to say is motivating. So doubt is something I think that you want to push out, and you do that by, again, having those internal dialogues and working hard every day, you know, and resting hard and doing everything that you need to do to accomplish, you know, the big picture.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic and actionable advice. You know, I want to talk to you about a little bit about, you know, being a teacher, because, you know, when you were in Singapore, here you were teaching at Evolve MMA. And how does being a teacher play into the understanding of martial arts and personal development and growth as an individual?
Being, I would recommend trying to teach to anybody, really. I mean, I know that when you come into the gym and you're a beginner, right? You're not going to go in there and just start trying to instruct people. Okay. There is a process to it, right? But once you start getting some things under your belt, or somebody asks you a question and you get a chance to break down a move, you get so much out of teaching. I get so much out of it when I get to break down a move, because I get to sit back and look at my own work and actually analyze what I'm actually doing. And sometimes I figure out things that are actually better by slowing it down, explaining it, breaking the technique down, or being like, oh, I didn't even realize I did that. Or, oh yeah, you know, paying attention to the things that can make your own stuff better and kind of digesting it for a second time. It can definitely be helpful to the teacher as well, to the instructor. I learn a tremendous amount when I'm teaching.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's, you know, as martial artists, you know, it's the essential part where, just like you mentioned, there's, you know, the five steps of exploring and discovering and learning, and that leads to growing and then eventually creating. And I think teaching is an essential part of it. A lot of our audience are not just practitioners, but teachers, and they really see the value of that. And, you know, as a teacher, I want to ask you, you know, martial arts is so much more than just the punching and the kicking and performance and getting in the ring, or as a traditional martial artist, or whatever the style may be that they're doing. How has it benefited you in your life?
To being a teacher?
Just being a martial artist in general, living that lifestyle. How has it benefited your life, you know, from happiness and performance, or just the way you live your life?
How has it not? Like, everything. I swear. I mean, I was even thinking about it today. I was like, it is so nice to have a physically abled, like in shape, you know, body, so that I feel like, you know, let me just explain this one time. I got my little 9-pound chihuahua. I was like 7 months pregnant, and my little chihuahua was like walking with me, and there was this big Cane Corso, if I'm saying that right. I don't know if it's whatever. It's a big dog. It's like a 80-pound dog. They're huge. Well, it was like, came to attack my little dog. So I had to like swoop up my dog, and I had my dog in my arms, and the dog came like running at me, like not interested in me, but wanted my dog out of my arms. And I push kicked the dog in the chest. And I also had to, like, before that, I had to tackle the dog off of my dog. But like, being physically capable, it is, you know, something I think I walk to my car with confidence. You know, I don't think that I am inviting in any way to like be a victim. And I think that being a martial artist gives people that sense of confidence. And I think it's so important for women to have that. And it's great for everybody to have it. And the stories that you hear about changing lives, you know, children getting into martial arts and, you know, getting out of a bad situation through martial arts, which is a healthy outlet. For some kids have a lot of energy, you know, and they'd be doing destructive things, but instead they're in the gym working on their jab. I mean, or working on their arm bar, or, you know, sports saves lives. Martial arts builds confidence. And I think that's just something for me that has given back to me in every facet. I remember too, like I was in Mexico on a catamaran, and so there my ex's mother was, she had an asthma attack. She was out snorkeling with us. She had an asthma attack, and everybody was freaking out. And, you know, like internally I'm freaking out a little bit too, because this woman is like, she's purple, like she's, you know, and she's a person I care about. And, you know, realistically, there's no help coming. Nobody has help around the middle of the ocean. And I 100% contribute my ability to compartmentalize and stay calm in that moment to training in MMA. and being a martial artist, because I'm in high pressure situations all the time, whether it's going to practice and struggling to get out of a triangle choke before I pass out, or it's being, you know, on, you know, fighting Holly Holm, you know, for the world championship and, you know, finding a way to stay composed and finish it in the fifth round. Those situations, like being a martial artist, gave me the composure because I had had to be in that type of a situation time and time again, to where I could sit back and actually think instead of freak out and be over emotional. And, you know, I ended up in taking in her inhaler into my lungs, like thinking about that. We were giving her nitrogen. Like everybody was like, let's, you know, what can we do? What can we do? So she couldn't breathe. Her bronchial tubes were completely, you know, so we'd tried already giving her the inhaler. She was not inhaling. So then I sprayed like 10 of them into my lungs, mouth to mouth, and I forced it into her lungs. And, you know, I mean, it ended up saving a life. And I'm not telling this story because I want any kind of like credit or anything like that. But what I'm saying is, like, the moment that I was able to have clarity, and there was the moment that I can attribute to, like, that's what it means to be a martial artist, to be calm and have clarity in the toughest of situations. No doubt in my mind, I would have been like everybody else, an emotional wreck, freaking out, not able to think clearly, had I not been a martial artist and disciplined in that type of a situation environment my whole life.
Yeah. No, I love that story because, you know, it exhibits that all the training of continuously putting yourself in uncomfortable situations day out, and then the skill becomes making yourself comfortable in the uncomfortable situation. And then now when you're out on the street and something like this happens, it's an automatic response so that you can create a solution, you know, to the problem and save the woman's life. And that's very powerful. And you know, to me, that's always been the superpower of martial arts. You know, people ask.
Yes. Martial arts is incredible in every way. And, you know, I tell these stories because I want to encourage people to, like, to realize, like, their potential. And I mean, nobody ever wants to be in a situation like that, right? But when you realize like how much martial arts, like for me, how much martial arts has given to me, that ability, man, I can't give enough thanks. Like, I love the sport with every fiber of my being, and I'm so thankful for everything that it has given to me. So it's I encourage
definitely,
like,
everybody. Priceless.
You're never too young and you're never too old to start. I truly believe that.
That's fantastic. You know, it's even for me, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, and that goes in every situation with degreeing variances of tension. You know, whether you're talking to somebody or you're having a difficult conversation, or you're trying to connect with your children or your students, or the guy who cuts you off down the street, to life and death situations, that ability to choose the response and not emotionally react and take a pause, I think it's the most phenomenal thing that we can, you know, if we were to say one thing that leads the whole process, it really kind of sticks out.
Yeah.
And you know, that leads me to the next question I wanted to ask you. You know, you've been a pioneer in women's mixed martial arts and women's martial arts, you know, and even in the development of mixed martial arts totally. And in the sense that, you know, it was a time when the bigger promotions and things weren't pushing women's martial arts. You came up in that era to now we see how big it is. First of all, how does that make you feel to be a big part of that evolution?
Well, it's pretty incredible. I'll tell you what, I didn't have a clue that it could ever be something like that when I started doing it. But to see where it's got, I mean, I couldn't have imagined it. I really couldn't have. I mean, it's more than a dream come true, because I wouldn't have even been able to fathom the greatness, you know, the power that women have in this sport and the role models and examples that these ladies are. Like, wow. I don't really want to take much credit for it, to be honest, because I didn't do it with that intent. I'll be honest. I just did it because I liked it. I was not coming into martial arts to, you know, to change the world. I came in and trained because I'm like, this is great. I love it. I want to do it. And I just kept at it. And I was very passionate about it. And slowly doors started to open and opportunities started to arise. And I started to realize, like, wow, I could make a living on this. I could make a career out of this. Who would have thought? Like, I'm just following my passion here. That's all I'm doing. I'm just following my passion. And at that time, like, it just kept leading me further and further into the sport. And I mean, yeah, here I am.
Absolutely phenomenal. And now you can see, you know, not only women's mixed martial arts, but mixed martial arts is has taken off to a whole nother level now. And you know, I think it's one of the most popular watch sports in the world at the moment, and it continues to grow. I'm a big fan myself, as I know many of the people in the audience are.
Do you feel like outdated technology is holding you back from running your martial arts studio? Your time and energy should be spent on the mat helping your students succeed, not struggling to find workarounds with inefficient software. At Wattify, we believe your software shouldn't hold you back. Wattify's all-in-one martial arts management platform is the only technology you'll need to run your martial arts studio stress-free. You will work with a member of our team to customize the Wattify platform to meet your needs specific to your business. Wattify is user-friendly, low-cost, and has all the tools you need in one place, from automated billing to digital waivers to belt rank tracking, scheduling, and more. Instead of using messy spreadsheets or a pen and a paper, let Wattify do the hard work for you. Trusted by over 5,000 business owners around the world, Wattify helps overwhelmed martial arts school owners reclaim their time and be confident in their success. Go to wattify.com/blackbelt to claim 50% off your first 2 months today. That's wodify.com/blackbelt.
Tell me something that's interesting that I really wanted to get your perspective on is, you know, there's a slight difference in the promotion of mixed martial arts from the Eastern perspective versus the Western perspective. Would you like to share with what you feel about that?
Well, I feel like in Asia, people tend to be more familiar with what it really means to be a martial artist, where in the Western market, a lot of times people just want to tune in and be entertained and be kind of that ignorant fan that's kind of like, punch him in the face, you know, like that's all they know about martial arts, that people punch each other. And that's fine. I mean, you are allowed to be any kind of fan that you want to be. I have no problem with how anybody wants to appreciate this sport. That's fine with me. But if you want to know the real difference, is that Asia is like the birthing place of martial arts. And Asia, I mean, that's where real like martial arts, like Muay Thai in Thailand, Judo and Jiu-Jitsu, actually Jiu-Jitsu started in Japan. I mean, there's Wing Chun. I mean, like all these real great karate, right? All these, like, they started in Asia. Like kids grow up, like when they start going to school, they start doing martial arts. They do that right away. So it's part of how they grow up, where sometimes in the Western, like, no, you know, there's a lot of Americans, I would say, and like people that just have never done any kind of martial art. It's not readily available in schools like it is in Asia. You know, there's wrestling. I mean, I think in public schools, I'm trying to think of anything else that, I mean, it's just wrestling. Yeah. Like pretty much, like, I think it would be rare to find a public school here in America anywhere that offered another form of martial arts besides wrestling. I don't know. Can you think of?
I don't know of one, but I do know of one school in Canada, in Calgary, that actually has instituted a martial arts program.
See, that's great. We need more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need more of that. But that's not how it is in Asia. Like everybody, pretty much everybody, like 90%, 95% of people have done a form of martial arts by the time they're 18 years old. They have done it in some way, shape, or form. So they just have a different appreciation. You know, they get those fundamentals and the things that martial arts is really about. You know, integrity, honesty, loyalty, respect, like those things are things that you learn when you train martial arts. And those are things that people learn in Asia. Like in Singapore, if you leave your phone on the tram or you leave your purse somewhere, there's a pretty good chance you'll get it back. Pretty good chance. You know, I'm not saying you will get it back for sure. People are still people, but I got to dial it back to, why is that? Maybe it's because when they were kids, like they were always instilled that training martial arts, it's always about being honest, being a good person. You know, martial arts is never taught to to harm people, it's always, you know, taught first and foremost as a self-defense, you know? So you just kind of learn integrity. It's just part of being a martial artist. And that's just something that's very distinguishable between the Western market and the Eastern market. We want to talk about, yeah, just how it's different and how people appreciate the difference.
That's very well said. And I think a lot of the martial artists that are, you know, lifelong practitioners understand that as well, you know, across the board, across the markets. I want to talk to you a little bit about training. And so when you're preparing for a fight, or if you have, you know, somebody is preparing for a fight, the fighters that are listening, regardless of what their competition may be, whether it's MMA or karate or boxing or wrestling or jiu-jitsu, whatever it may be, when you're doing your preparation, what are some of the considerations you take into? We talked about mindset earlier, but, you know, from a perspective of how much time do you spend drilling versus how much time do you spend sparring? You know, like what does your regimen look like? How do you balance it?
Well, I think for different styles, it's going to be different because some people are, you know, more strikers. Some people are more grapplers. Some people are more wrestlers. So, and then there's the also the aspect of like whether you're in a training camp or whether you're training before. You know, if you're training before, you're working on things that you're not as good at. So for me, that might mean that I'm doing more striking, or that I'm, you know, continuing to like sharpen the tools for my wrestling, or that I'm working on takedown defense, you know, things that I need to work to complete my game. Then when you enter the training camp, which is like 6 to 8 weeks before a fight, you want to work at sharpening the tools that you're already great at, and specifically the ones that you're going to need to beat this style of opponent. So, I mean, typically, like if we're just training, like outside of a camp, we spend 2 days a week sparring, you know, so five minute rounds of sparring twice a week. So there's that. And then, you know, go a few times a week. I like to spend the majority of my time doing grappling or ground based stuff, just because that's what I love and I enjoy. And, you know, I don't have to go and do the things that I don't like as much, you know, because I'm not currently fighting. So yeah, with all that being said, that's what's nice about being a retired martial artist, is that you get to, you know, you get to pick and choose a little bit and just enjoy the process.
That's awesome. And how has your transition been from being an athlete now into an executive role?
Well, I'm not gonna lie, it is challenging, actually. It's really challenging. Maybe that's not a surprise to people. I think, you know, it wasn't a surprise to me, but you can never anticipate how difficult something will be, right? So I go from being interviewed mostly, like, you know, how you are, you're asking me the questions, and now I ask the athletes the questions. So there, I mean, there's a science to it. It's not as easy as everybody makes it seem to like have a conversation with somebody, but be the person who's forced to keep the flow going. You know, and different people respond differently. Like me, I'm really long-winded, right? So you probably give you plenty of time to line up the next question, or maybe give you some tidbits in there that you want to kind of elaborate on. Some people are not like that. Some people give you really short answers and you're like, oh, you know. So, I mean, there's more to my job, obviously, than just that. But my favorite parts are working hands-on with the athletes. I like to interview them. I like to talk to them before their fights, and I like to talk to them when they win, and I like to talk to them when they lose too. I like to see where their headspace is, and creating content for ONE Championship in that way is probably one of my favorite parts of my job. And yeah, being over here in the US, it's been a little more challenging because we had planned to throw the first live event for ONE Championship in Q4 of 2020, COVID. Need I say anything more, right? We still haven't been able to do that. But I will say that there is a four fight series coming up in April for ONE Championship that's going to have like 4 weeks in a row. And it's going to be on primetime on TNT. So it'll be first time that ONE Championship gets some primetime air. So yeah, and it'll be available and free for everybody to watch. And I'm really excited for that. I really am. Like, Demetrius Johnson's going to be fighting. Eddie Alvarez is going to be fighting. Sage Northcutt at some point will be fighting. These, you know, they're great. Everybody on the cards, like a lot of people, I think, will finally get to see, you know, what ONE Championship is about. And the kind of style that people fight with, like, they fight so hard. I mean, think about it. When you come from an economically deprived background and you have literally an opportunity of a lifetime. Some of these fighters, like they, a lot of them, they come from the bottom rungs of society. We cannot even imagine like what a life is like for a poor boy or girl in Thailand, you know, that has to fight, you know, at eight or nine years old to make money so their family can eat. Like, this is the crazy stories that come from these athletes. It's like, how can you not love what they're doing? Like their dreams, like this is something that they could have never done without one championship, you know, to give them that opportunity to be a world champion and make money and change their family's lives. Like, no, it's incredible. So these athletes fight hard. They fight with something more than just, you know, because they love it. Like me, I just did it because I love it. Not because I had to, I was just passionate. It's like their passion and drive and desire are next level. And they really fight with that kind of intensity. So yeah, one championship is something special.
That's very cool. That's very cool. You know, yeah. Like when you have your back against the wall and there's no other options but to go forward, is a very dangerous opponent to encounter.
Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt about it. So it's going to be really good. It's going to be a great, it's one on TNT. So if anybody wants to look that up, it's the prime time on the US and it starts April 7th for four consecutive weeks. And they're going to go out with a bang. The last card will be pretty incredible. There'll be the flyweight world champion, Adriano Moraes, and he's fighting Demetrius Johnson. So we're going to get to see, you know, Demetrius Johnson, in my opinion, is a GOAT, but this fight is really important to his legacy because, you know, will he be able to be a champion in a whole other promotion? And we saw it in the UFC forever. Like he was the champion, you know, and then he barely lost and he came over and he's had some great fights, some close ones too, though. I mean, it's not been a cakewalk for the man, you know, and now he gets a chance to become a champion in a whole other division. And then, you know, Eddie Alvarez is like, he's held a belt in I think every promotion that he's been in. So this, you know, he's working his way up as well. No, it's going to be really, really good. I'm excited to see what they do. And I'm more excited for the US to get a taste of what one championship is all about. I mean, I think people watch and the people are aware of one championship, but you know, I'm not going to lie, when it's difficult to watch it at those hours of the morning, it's like four thirty in the morning Pacific time. If you want to tune in for a live championship event, one championship event, but no, it'll be on prime time for us here. So no excuses. Everybody better be watching.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I think the casual fans may not appreciate it, but one championship has had quite a run of great fights. So if you're looking to watch some great fights and you haven't had a chance, I think I would definitely recommend going over there. And one thing I want to ask you then too is on you know, your experience now interviewing and coaching fighters and coming up, if somebody wants to get into MMA, somebody wants to get started, where's the first place you would point them to?
The first place, well, depends on their age. I think if they're young, I think that they should wrestle, obviously, in school. Like if you have any opportunity to wrestle, I highly recommend it because it's something that is so important to being a fighter, to have that ability to control whether the fight goes to the ground or whether the fight stays on the feet. Usually the better wrestler can determine that. To go to a local martial arts gym, right? And again, I've heard people so many times like, oh, you know, I've been wanting to try it. I really do, but I'm just kind of like, I haven't gotten started yet. Stop having that internal dialogue. Stop it. Make a decision and go. No excuses. No, oh, you know, but I need a, you know, someone to come with me or I need this, that. Just try it. Give it a week. What is the worst thing that can happen? You don't like it. Nothing. Then go home and you know, it's not for you. Okay, great. I bet you that's not going to happen. If you have any desire or calling to want to try it, stop letting time pass you by. Just go try it. Stop making excuses. Stop having the internal dialogue with yourself. Make a decision, pick a date, and go. That's my biggest advice. Like, don't put it off anymore. Just go and try it. Give it a week. Give it 2 weeks. I would say even 2 weeks. I think you'll fall in love with it after a week. But you got to realize too, you know, that you're going to be uncomfortable a little bit. You're going to have to be a little bit comfortable getting uncomfortable, but it is so rewarding. You learn things so fast when you come in as a newbie. You learn things at an incredible rate. So it's very rewarding and it's very fun. And it beats the hell out of running on a treadmill
yes.
to get in shape. Like it really does. It's way more fun. So yeah, that's it. Get in there.
So then on the flip side of that, what are some things that they should look for to avoid when they're looking for an MMA school or coach? The environment yeah. to get into, what's something that they should avoid? Because a lot of people are a little afraid of getting injured and getting hurt. So what's yeah. your advice to them on that?
Well, look, I mean, I think we live in a great modern world where you can read reviews on places. Like, you know, make sure that you're picking a gym that has good reviews and has a good feeling when you go there. If something doesn't feel right, I'm not going to say that everybody is a great martial arts instructor or runs a great gym or, you know, Bob's Gym MMA, you know, or Bob's Garage, you know, MMA is a great place to go and train. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I've seen some crazy videos on like YouTube and Instagram or whatever of like these instructors telling people to do the craziest things that I'm like, nobody should do that. Like nobody, you know, so, but if you don't know, you don't know, right? Just be careful. Things should make sense in a gym. Like you shouldn't be doing things that are like causing you injury, like, you know, like trying to crack boards with your forehead or something like that, you know, or you shouldn't be going, if you go into a gym and you're getting just brutalized, like nobody's nice. Like they just want to like, feast off of the new guy or gal. That is not how it should be. Now, I'm not saying that you're not going to get, you know, submitted or that you're not going to, get your licks a little bit, but you should be able to leave feeling like the people who you trained with cared about you.
Yes.
That's what you should leave feeling like. You should leave like, man, I got choked out today. But after I got choked out, I asked them how they did it. And they broke it down for me. And they said, here's the mistake that you made. Let's try to work on that. That's what a martial arts gym should feel like. You should never leave a martial arts gym being like, I hate that. That was an awful experience. That was a horrible feeling. Those people were cruel. They were mean. They just wanted to like beat me up. Like, no, like there should be always a conversation. People should be willing to help you. People should be trying to make you better. That's the point of going to a gym and having teammates, you know? So just be careful of that. Like, and that's it really.
Wonderful. I think the same goes for everybody in all styles and systems. You know, you got to go to a place where, of course, it's going to be tough. Of course, there's going to be discipline, but there's that underlying attitude of, hey, this is for your benefit and not to beat you down, which we know getting uncomfortable is a big part of it, but it has to be done in a safe manner so that you can grow in the sport.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there are levels to this as well. Like as far as like, if you just want to go in and get some cardio kickboxing and you just kind of want to learn to do that, sign up for the right class. Understand a little bit what you're getting yourself into. You know, don't go into like a pro practice. Obviously I don't think most gyms would just let a random person come in, but be sensible, like sign up for the white belt class, right? Sign up for the, you know, for the beginner's kickboxing, you know, and make sure it's a gym that has that kind of programming that can fit you. If you're not, you know, if you're not a beginner, like there's different kinds of gyms all over the place. Or if you are a beginner, excuse me, that will kind of help you get your feet under you and, you know, help you elevate appropriately.
That's awesome. And, you know, when we look at the sport of MMA, it's evolving quite a bit in the sense that, you know, in the beginning, the very first UFC you go look at, you had all these different styles coming in. And then from there, jiu-jitsu came about. Then after that, you know, now we need to have wrestling and then striking. And so everything started to kind of mesh. In your opinion, so I've seen, if I back it up, I've seen, you know, at the Disney World Championships, for example, that they have in Orlando, Florida. It's broadcast on ESPN. About 5 years ago, they started a division there called Sport MMA for kids. And what Sport MMA is striking to the body, takedown and no strikes on the ground. So, you know, they've kind of made it safe. You wear MMA shin guards and MMA gloves. And now I'm watching these kids who are like 6, 7, 8 years old. They're growing up with, you know, jujitsu and wrestling and striking together. That's, you think that's going to really change the heading of MMA? Because before it was like, hey, I'm a wrestler. I need to have striking to make myself be more involved. Or I'm a striker. Now I need to add the grappling and the takedown defense to complete the holes. Now it seems like it's all coming up as a blend as opposed to individual sections.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that personally. I know some people are not, but I think that if you could make this sport a whole sport, why wouldn't you want to do that? You know, why wouldn't you want to learn? Because sometimes learning those transitions is the most difficult part after the fact. Learning how to marry all the, you know, different forms of it. There's the ground part, there's the transition between the ground, you know, the wrestling part, and then there's the striking part. So if you can just have a seamless transition between all those, I think that's great. Like, I think that's the way it should be. You know, would be surprised how many pro fighters say like, oh, I just have such a hard time like connecting the two. That's because they didn't grow up doing it that way. Right. We learned it individually. So then the transitions are where you see people evolving in the sport now. Like, it's everything in between. It's not so much the wrestling. It's not so much the striking. It's not so much the grappling. It's everything that makes those things work together functionally. Like, that's where the evolution of sport is, because everybody can kickbox pretty much. Like, everybody can wrestle a bit. Everybody can grapple a bit, you know? So what is separating everybody? You know, it's like, how can you put those things together better? How can you be a more, you know, slick transitions, right? So I think training it as a whole, making it its own sport, is definitely going to be the future.
For sure. I think, and you know, the Disney World Martial Arts Championship has done a really good job of it. You know, over the last few years, that division is growing quite a bit. And, you know, I've seen kids grow up in there from like 4 or 6, now they're 8, 9, 10, 12 years old. And watching some of their fights is so exciting because they're transitioning so well, you know, between the ranges and adapting, that it's quite exciting to watch some of those fights. It's pretty fascinating to see that.
Yeah.
So, you know, with regards to that, you know, there still seems to be, you know, there's a statement that says jack of all trades, master of none. But I think now once everybody works on the transitions, and that seems to be where the base is going, because everybody's really learning to transition, that's where it's headed. Do you think it's going to head to jack of all trades, master of one, and be the next rise? Because you're master of one, but you've, you know, mastered the transitions to a certain level and all the other ranges.
I like that. I think so. And I think there's definitely room to train this sports, you know, in a little bit like individually. Like, I don't see why, you know, a mixed martial artist can't just go and grapple or just do some striking. But I think to understand the sport as one, I think, is really important. And I think that's something that that you see the direction of the sport headed now, where you didn't see that in, you know, in the first Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, you know, those guys, like, you know, Anderson, like, they had to learn how to mix it together after the fact. Yes. And I think, again, the evolution is to put the sport together as one and learn it that way.
And then while we're on that aspect, you know, you look at gas tank, right? Like, the gas tank of not getting tired. Like, that seems to be a martial art all on its own to develop. You know, like, you have the ranges of the kickboxing, the grappling, the clinching, the strategy, the mindset, but the stamina and that gas tank, that's a whole nother weapon on its own, you know? And what are your thoughts about that? Because, you know, for me, it's always been getting exhausted is like the one thing that you never want to happen, because then you're fighting the other person, you're exhausted, you can't move. It's like the worst feeling in the world, you know? And so tell me about that, about what your thoughts are on conditioning specifically to use it as a weapon, not just to survive, you know?
Oh, I like that to use it as a weapon. I mean, you're absolutely right that I think that's the scariest thing for me. Being gassed out, tired is way more scary than fighting anybody. I mean, no, like, because you can have all the tools in the world, and if you're too tired to do it, like, how scary is that? Like, too tired to even defend yourself. So, I mean, conditioning is up there. It is, I would say it's the most important thing, to be honest. Like, you've got to be a well-conditioned athlete. So that's scary to not feel. And again, that goes back to when we were just talking at the beginning of this podcast. You know, it's like, why do people overtrain or what? Because they're scared of that. They're scared of being tired. Like, so they want to push, 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 like, and try to, you know, maximize and push those limits, you know. But just again, it's just as important to rest. So you've got to always find the balance. And yeah, I hope I answered your question. I have a habit of sometimes of just like trailing off into whatever, you know, talk about what I want to talk about. But hopefully, did I answer your question?
No, you did. You did. And I have some follow-ups to that because, you know, it's for me over the years, it's been my obsession with the conditioning because that feeling of being so like it's for somebody who hasn't felt it, getting smashed, somebody bigger on you, stronger, or they don't even have to be bigger and stronger. You're just getting smashed. You can't get up. It leaves you very vulnerable. And you may have all the greatest skills in the world. You might have the best strategy and coaches in the world. But if your stamina is not there, or your strength, you know, which is the combination of strength and conditioning, that because exhaustion is the biggest enemy, right? Would you think so? Because being exhausted then leads you to become overwhelmed, then it gets you distracted, then it gets you panicky, and then now you go down this other route. Whereas if you have the stamina, then when you hit when you know when the proverbial the you know the shit hits the fan. Once I don't know how else to say it,
No, that's a great way to say it.
you could actually choose to choose another option instead of go down that kind of wave, right?
Yeah, and that's why it's really important not to overtrain, not to, you know, you've got to push it the right ways, the right time, but focus also on recovery. I can't emphasize that enough. Also nutritional, you know, the aspects too, you know, making sure your iron is up. There's so many things to that as well that can also lead to being fatigued or having a chronic fatigue problem. No, but you've got to be willing to work hard. You've got to be willing to push into that red zone into training. So for a couple of reasons, so that you can try to, you know, push further before you hit that red zone, you know, but also so you know what it feels like. So you know, like, and you my coach, Robert Follis, rest in peace, Rob, no longer with us. You know, he always would talk about tapering, you know, like that red line. You don't want to go deep into the red. Like, you don't, I mean, ideally, right? You don't want to push. You want to be smart about it. You don't want to go so far into the red zone that you can't defend yourself anymore, that you can't, you know, there's a time and a place, and you want to teeter on that, dip into the red, but come back out, dip into the red, but come back out. So you're pushing the pace, and hopefully you're going to put that person to where they're in the red, and you can get that dominant position. Because if you're teetering on the red and they're teetering on the red and you get on top of them, what do you think is going to happen? Right? You're probably going to make them quit, or they're going to give up the submission or whatever, because you're going to have an opportunity to lay on them, to breathe, to hit them, you know, whatever. So it's important to push into that zone, but it's also important to be measured about it, be a little bit calculated, and understand when's the right time to do that. If you're in the first minute of the fight and you go out swinging for the fences and you gas yourself out in 60 seconds and that person just kind of moved out of the way and they're fresh, was that a good idea? No, it wasn't. It's a terrible idea. This is something Francis Ngannou had to figure out, actually. I don't think Francis Ngannou had experienced what that felt like to be in the red until he fought Stipe Miocic the first time, and he had 5 rounds of it, and he probably felt like, you know, one of those horses in the race that their heart was about to explode. You know what I mean? Like, horses will run till their hearts explode. That's insane to me. But people push themselves to some crazy limits as well. You see that he broke, like, he literally could not force his body to do something else. I guarantee you, he didn't want to be down under Stipe, right? Then he comes back the next fight. It was like too measured. He was telling himself, like, you know, relax, relax, relax. And then nothing happened against Derek Lewis, right? And then he figured it out, and he's been on this great win streak since then. You know, I mean, these are things like sometimes we see it on the major platforms where fighters figure it out in front of the whole world. And sometimes, you know, but Francis is fairly green too, right? So he doesn't have a lot of experience. If you could figure that out in the gym before you get to the, you know, the main stage, that would be ideal. This is where good coaches come into play, because athletes, you know, we're not always the smartest people when it comes to this kind of thing. You know, we have this desire and drive. We just want to win. We want to push ourselves to the maximum all the time. We're afraid we're not doing enough. Then you need that voice of reason to come in, your coach. Hey, let's relax. Let's do a half day today. Or how about, you know, for your morning workout, you just go for a walk. I just want you to get the blood flowing. I want you to push yourself today, because we've been going so hard for 2 weeks. You're going to peak too soon. You're going to overtrain, right? Same thing in a fight. Hey, relax a little bit. You won that round. Let's take the first minute and circle, you know, take the first, first 20 seconds and circle. And then let's set up our shot. Let's relax a little bit though. You're doing great. That voice of reason, like that's where good coaching comes into play.
Yeah. So if I hear you correctly, it's that, cultivating that self-awareness to make the choices and be aware of yourself, what's happening with you energetically from perspective of your stamina or what you're going to do, but together while watching and observing your opponent so that you can set the rhythm and keep centering yourself back so that you don't overcommit and you also don't undercommit. So back to what you had said in the beginning, it's always back to finding that balance, right?
Yes. Martial arts is very much about balance, and so is life, you know, so martial arts lends itself. And I think so many other situations where balance is essential. And, you know, you asked about a good, you know, gyms and what things to look out for, you know, a coach who can understand about their athletes and, you know, uniquely recognize the situations and what you're going through, I think is invaluable. You know, coaches are a very important part of this as well, because, you know, you have to learn that kind of self-awareness. We're not just born with it. We don't just figure it out, you know, in a day or even in a year. It's a learning process. And that's why, you know, that's why I think martial arts, you can see athletes who are a lot older still being at the top level, where you don't really see that so much in, like, you know, football or soccer or basketball. I mean, there's kind of a time where you are the most elite, you're the fastest, and you've got to be, you know, you've got to be fast and strong, because if you're not that, you just don't survive in that sport, because it's just not as much room for, you know, the intricacies and the game planning and the, you know, all the smarts that go into it, right? There's a very heavy part of martial arts that's about strategy and about how well you can feather that, how well you can stay in that zone or know when to push or not. There's thousands of seconds that it's thousands of decisions that have to be made in seconds, you know, like so many decisions that you're making with your body in a matter of seconds when you're fighting. And, you know, knowing tricks, knowing strategy, knowing, you know, when to go into the red zone and when not to, when to taper back, how to keep a poker face to not show that you're tired, to not show. These are things that come, that mastery or getting towards mastery, because I don't believe you ever really master martial arts. But the closer you get to that point, I think the better you are in the sport. And so you don't always have to be the strongest or the fastest. Sometimes you have to be the smartest. You know, to be the better fighter, sometimes being smarter matters more than being stronger, you know? So
I love how you said that, you know, and I 1000% agree with you. You know, there's just, you can be more masterful than you were the day before in your actions, in your choices, in your training. But the moment we declare ourselves as a master, or we think we've mastered something, the river stops moving, it gets stagnant. And then, you know, you just start dying inside.
Yeah.
I love how you said that. That's a very phenomenal thing for people to take away. And, you know, that leads me to, you know, one of the final questions is, so, you know, there's skill development, and this goes for all martial arts, of course. There's skill development, then there's the strategy, okay, and stamina, which we talked about, all three, and training them together. Where do you see stillness?
So give me it. Let me make sure I just understand that. I think this is a really good question, but I want to make sure that I understand where you're going with it before I answer.
For sure. Where do you see stillness, as in stillness of mind, stillness, you know, we define stillness as when we train it, that still point between the the past and the future, that still right. point between your thoughts, that the zone, the flow right. state, that still point. Because when we're in that still point, then our skill, our strategy, and our stamina all converge. Our sense of self disappears. And you know, you're not there, but it's doing it as itself. And you're just an observer watching it happen. I would love right. to get your take on that and some of your experiences feeling that.
So it's interesting. You describe it as stillness. I think what I wouldn't probably... For me, I don't know if that's the great word that I could use, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. There's this moment in time when as an athlete that you know, there are many moments actually that you can take, and it's like you're there, but you're not exactly there. You know what I mean? And stillness can mean like muscle memory, right? So I would say like muscle memory is a moment where you can have stillness in the mind. Maybe you've been hit and you're not completely all there, but your body will still do what you've trained it to do because you have disciplined your body so many times, right? That you can not totally be there in your mind and body connection, but your body's still going to be there. So it's like this out of body experience. Or stillness, I think, could be when you take, you know, 15 minutes of the day and you meditate and you just try to get calm and one with yourself. But just get all the other influences. I mean, there's so many things that influence us, you know, the light from the camera right now, the fact that the room is a little bit warm, the fact that, you know, I can see the trees moving a little bit outside. We are constantly full of stimulation. We have conversation, we hear things, we smell things, we see things, we touch things. And then you go in as a martial artist and it's a hyper stimulation because you've got to make decisions like this. You've got somebody who's actively trying to dissemble you, essentially. You know, it's like playing a physical game of chess, and there's so many things going on at once that I think it really is important. Again, coming back to balance, when you have a hyper stimulus, you've got to get something that's the opposite of that. Taking time to meditate or taking that time for yourself, even if it could be literally 2 minutes, it could be 60 seconds, it can be one breath, it could be as simple as a and just take that moment to gather yourself, have the clarity. Okay, I'm back. I'm going again. I've got things to do. I've got to move. But just taking that second, again, it's about the balance, right? It comes back to that. Stillness is a part of, you know, separating yourself from the busyness.
I love that, you know, and because, you know, for people listening, as Misha mentioned, you can train stillness in stillness where you're just focusing on the breath. Then you have stillness in movement where you may be shadow boxing. And then you have that stillness and movement or the chaos when somebody else is trying to hit you back or when you're rolling, right? Because for me, when I'm rolling, I feel it there. It's like, boom.
Yeah, you don't have time to think.
Stopping you, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like you're thinking like, you know, sometimes I'll be like striking and I'll actively think and I'll be very conscious of what's going on. And I'll be thinking, okay, every time I fake this way, you know, she drops her hand right there and I'm going to try to place a head kick right there. Or I noticed, okay, I've been noticing that body, I'm literally that at that pace, like notice the body's open. All right, I'm gonna try that push kick right in the center, see if I can nail that, right? And then there's the times when it's just like, it's too fast for that. And you just gotta go. And you're not really present in that way of thinking. You're not cognitively thinking about the next move. And that's very beautiful too. It's very freeing because you just get to like, let all your energy and your technique out. But your mind is almost at rest in that very moment. Your mind is at rest and you just get to enjoy the beauty of your body, just creating art.
I love that. That's, you know, that's why I do it. That, that moment where you're in chaos and you choose peace. Cause I think oftentimes what happens is people think that peace is the absence of chaos, but it's actually your choice inside chaos.
Chaos.
Like, happiness is a choice inside struggle. Like courage is a choice.
So true.
Fear, you know?
And I think that might be, that may separate at least like really good grapplers versus not really good grapplers. I think sometimes people, they just get so overwhelmed and they're really trying to think, what should I do?
Yeah.
No, relax a little bit and trust yourself. And you might make a mistake. No big deal. You're in a gym. Ask what you did wrong. Learn. Get better. But then the next time you go in there, be an athlete. And athletes don't think about every single thing they do. I promise you, Serena Williams doesn't say, okay, I've got to hold the tennis racket right here at this exact point, and I've got to throw the ball to this exact height, and then I've got to hit it at that exact point in time. No, she goes, bang. And she just does it because she trusts herself. She believes in herself. You know, it's not, and she, in that moment, you know, she's focused, she has that clarity, but she's not overwhelming herself. You know, she still has a sense of stillness, and you need that in order to be able to, I think, to be an elite athlete. You've got to be able to have that balance.
I love that. Yeah. You know, cause when you're talking about elite grapplers or strikers or anybody, they're never thinking, because the moment you think you're in the past and you're playing catch up, they're always ahead of you. They're like 2-3 moves ahead of you.
Yeah.
You know, you do something, maybe they do something, you counter them, but they're waiting. They're like, oh, we knew you were going to do that. So it's almost like they're time traveling ahead of you.
Yeah,
because exactly. That level of presence is beautifully fascinating.
Yes.
Well, Misha, I want to thank you so much for your time and this great, wonderful conversation. I know the listeners enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. And I want to leave you with one final question. What does a black belt mean to you?
What does a black belt mean to me? It means a lot of time and a lot of discipline and a lot of self-discovery. And, you know, it's definitely a sign of accomplishment. I think if you see somebody with a black belt, you have to respect that. You have to respect, if nothing less than the time that somebody is willing to invest into something that they love, their passion. So black belts, you know, they've earned it. They've put their time in on the mat and they are, you know, disciplined. They've found balance. I don't think that you can't become a black belt and not have found a sense of balance, which is a great thing. I think every human being needs to find that sense of balance.
Bang. I don't think I can ask any more questions after that answer. That was perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
I'd love to have you back on in the future.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation. And speaking of balance now, after this wonderful conversation, I'm ready to go train. So
have a great day.
All right, you too.
Martial arts is the greatest vehicle to discover human potential. My friends, follow, like, subscribe, and share this message with the world. The Black Belt Podcast can be found on Apple, Spotify, Google, and all major broadcasting outlets. I'm your host, Harinder Singh, and always remember, wherever you go, everyone's a little bit safer. Wherever you are, anyone in need has a friend. And when you come home, they're happy to see you. It's a good life.